but newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFond, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Kurt Razanoff, who is the who was an MD and CEO and Chief Medical Officer of the Sansum Clinic, and Fred Kass, who is a who is the Director of Medical Oncology and Hematology at the Ridley Tree Cancer Center. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having us, Neil.
So I've only been here 19 and a half years. So tell me what Sansum Clinic is.
Well, Sansum Clinic is a not-for-profit medical foundation. It's a model that exists in California almost uniquely. So it's managed by a volunteer board of trustees and is a community asset, really. It's about 100 years old. We're very unique in that we're independent. Almost all the other medical foundations in California are affiliated with a hospital, and Sansum Clinic uniquely is not affiliated with a hospital. We work really closely with Cottage, but we're not part of Cottage, which is a real common area of confusion.
Well, you know, I have to say, you look terrific. You were the founder 100 years ago. And you've held up very well. So, you know, you look at the landscape for the healthcare system and you see it's sort of like business. We have a consolidation taking place in businesses. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago that there are 50% less companies today than there were 15 years ago that trade publicly. You know, UCLA, New York Hospital, they look like they're going to be the only two hospitals left in the country. How do you stand alone? How do you have a business strategy that permits you to stand alone?
Well, partly it's just, you know, in our DNA, we've always been alone. It is challenging because what is happening is as hospitals acquire physician groups, it changes the sort of dynamic under which everybody's operating. And so we have to keep up. We have to keep up with what's happening inside physician groups that are being acquired by hospitals, but we're not part of a hospital. And so that creates a certain kind of tension for us, actually. We're lucky because we do have a good cooperative relationship with Cottage. But yeah, you're right, Neil. There has been a huge consolidation within California already, just in that arena.
And it's very difficult to size could be an important component of innovation and growth. And yet you were able to construct the Ridley Tree Cancer Center, which looking at the commercials looks like a state-of-the-art operation, which is fantastic for a small community like ours. So how did that happen?
Well, this is really, you know, this is a, you know, great community story. I mean, the cancer care in Santa Barbara starts not quite 70 years ago. I mean, next year will be 70 years, 1949. We had a, you know, group of people in Santa Barbara that came together and said we need to provide cancer care in Santa Barbara. At that point, sophisticated treatment was available in Los Angeles, but no place closer. So that tradition of people, the community coming together to make sure that we had local sources of the best cancer care, you know, now goes back a couple of generations. I think what was remarkable was that the sheer task of doing that now, to create a cancer center now that delivers state-of-the-art care and is positioned to keep doing that in the future. That was a humbling task, but you know we were grateful we had the support of the community that put together $50 million to build that building and to bring state-of-the-art cancer care to our community. It's a great community story. It's a very special place we live.
So if you look at local news, which is the only thing I watch now because I can't stand listening to people screaming yell at each other on CNN or Fox, but if you look at the local news, there are three big sponsors. There's Dignity, there's you, and there's Cottage. Why is it necessary for the hospitals to advertise?
You know, asking me to comment on why hospitals do things is hard. You know, I think that there is a competitive market in terms of certain kinds of services. Like, you'll see the things that they advertise for typically are things like orthopedic surgery, something like that, where people can go. Those are elective procedures that are planned ahead of time, and people can, you know, find out that, you know, my friend says that Bob in Santa Monica is the guy to go to. And there's a tremendous amount of that. And so I think that the local hospitals, Dignity and Cottage, are trying to point out, no, that you can get that care here. It really is available. You know, I just want to echo on one thing that Fred was just commenting on, and that really is that support of the community. When you think that Ridley Tree Cancer Center is, of course, named after Lady Ridley Tree and Virgil Ealing's, the building's named after, and a number of people who are all acknowledged throughout that building. That is a remarkable thing about this community, yeah, is that it really stepped up in order really so that people wouldn't have to go out of town, yeah, so that people can get the care that they need right here.
I will say part of the advertising is also, it's less traditional advertising in the sense we think of corporate advertising as I've got a product, I want people to buy it. It's mostly, sometimes there's a story there to tell, and that's not a story necessarily that's well known in the community. You know, when I first came to town and was working at the Cancer Center in the 1990s, we used to jokingly refer to our cancer center as one of the best-kept secrets in the community because we had succeeded in putting in state-of-the-art radiation equipment, but most of the people we met socially didn't know that we did this. So part of the reason is just simply to let people know that a lot of people in the community came together with a huge effort and a lot of resources, and at least let people know that for something like cancer care that becomes important to so many families in our community, to let people know that there's that kind of resource in town.
When I was in the Hamptons, I used to go to the Hamptons when I was living in New York for the summer, and it's just a sleepy town, particularly 25, 30 years ago, and it had one of the best heart hospitals in New York because people who were rich who live in Southampton wanted to make sure they didn't die.
Right.
So there's sort of like you know, in a community like this, a lot of old donors, with nothing wrong with it, want to make sure they have the right health care.
No, but I think it's actually a great point to make because I think in credit to the donors that have supported our cancer center here, the philosophy of the cancer center has always been we want the support of the people in town that have the resources to make that kind of contribution. But the underlying philosophy has been to build a building that serves the entire community regardless of ability to pay. And so I think that part of the achievement of the people who came together to put together the cancer center is the notion that this is a building designed to democratize healthcare. We want everybody in the community, regardless of personal resources, to have access to the best cancer care we can.
And is Cottage a competitor? Do they provide their own is there their own cancer center? Do they, if someone has cancer, can they go to Cottage or can they go here? Or is it the same? What's the logistics?
Well, Cottage doesn't have a cancer center the way we do. Cottage offers, obviously, big surgeries happen at Cottage, and Cottage does do chemotherapy infusions. We do that as well. So there are areas where we overlap, but we do radiation therapy that Cottage does not do because it doesn't make sense for two entities in a town this size to do that.
But your doctors have admitting privileges.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have a doctor in your clinic then where the patient needs surgery, they would just go across the street?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, there's been an evolution in cancer treatment. When I first started to train, people can't over the radio see how old I am, but I'm old enough to have practiced in the 1980s. you know, at that point, most all of cancer care was delivered in the hospital. And over the course of my career, what I've watched is the transformation of cancer care so that now it's overwhelmingly an ambulatory service, and patients stay at home and come in the cancer center for care, and very few of our patients actually require hospitalization.
If you look at your commercials with the sound off, you think it was a resort. I mean, you know, and that's helps healing.
I think that part of the challenge in cancer care is to create a culture and atmosphere where people can walk in and have their heart rates get lower, not higher. I mean, that's our goal.
And do you get referrals from Cottage? Is it go both ways?
Mostly, Cottage doesn't really do a lot of outpatient treatment except through physicians. So the referrals would all come from physicians. To Fred's point, what's been very interesting to see recently is that we'll have patients that will go to Los Angeles sometimes to get a second opinion, and the opinion will be, you should just get treated in Santa Barbara. We've seen that a number of times, and it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy in the sense that you have a great building, you attract great doctors, and then that continues to build on itself, which is really rewarding for the patients. If they go down to Cedars or a facility like that and the guys there say, there's no need to come, you should just stay closer to home.
And it's important to the community. Beyond the individual benefits, it's also important because people who look for a house to retire to want to be in a place that has first-class healthcare. So to the extent that you're providing something that is really special, it helps housing prices as well.
So, well, the major risk factor for cancer is aging. I mean, we talk about risk factors, but by and large, our likelihood of needing an oncologist increases as we get older. And so for those people who are moving to this community as a retirement objective, I mean, having a good cancer center, I guess, is, you know, should be important.
Well, thank you for that depressing note, Fred. With that, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kurt Razanoff, the director and CEO, the CEO and Chief Medical Officer of Sansum Clinic, and Fred Kass, the Director of Medical Oncology and Hematology at the Ridley Tree Cancer Center. So before, we were talking about how the new center is providing, will provide health care for everyone, but with the whole fight about Medi-Cal and Medicaid and the elimination of a lot of the good things about Obamacare, can we be sure that people with, as the total population, will be able to get health care?
Yeah. Well, I mean, both Sansum and Ridley Tree Cancer Center have a policy of taking care of everybody. If people cannot afford it, we have charitable programs. They do need to apply to show that they can't afford it, and then we will treat them for free. Yeah. So we're pretty committed to treating the whole community. Yeah. The Affordable Care Act, you know, has certainly allowed a lot more people to get health care more easily than they were before, and at least as it's structured now, it's not as terrifying as it used to be if you, you know, had a pre-existing condition and lost your job. Fortunately, those kind of elements are still in place. But, yeah, Neil, you're right. I mean, access to care is a big issue.
One thing, I think that's where, in some respects, philanthropy, the local philanthropy of the community has been so critical, really in two respects. One is since the 1980s, the part of the cancer program offering has been social services support for patients. Now, when we first started social services in the 1980s, we thought of social services as mostly behavioral. Someone to meet with the patient, meet with the family, talk about the stress of illness, try to cushion patients and their families from the emotional impact of the diagnosis. In the last 30 years, what's really evolved is that our social services department, as it's grown, now takes on probably the financial burden of cancer more than the emotional burden. Probably two-thirds of our department now, we have quite a big department, two-thirds of our department is involved in helping patients find the financial resources, whether through our charitable program or a combination with other charitable programs, to make sure that they can afford the cost of cancer care. So we've depended on philanthropy to set up the funds to help subsidize the cost of for patients who can't afford it. And we've used philanthropic funds to fund the people in our social services department who work with patients, not only on the direct costs of care, but the indirect costs of care. It may be that they can afford cancer care, but they can't afford to pay their rent. We've got to find a way to cushion this for our patients.
And I think also what we've seen over the last 20 years is that so much of the cost of care is now in pharmaceuticals. There's been recently some data that I've seen that show that the cost of drugs now exceeds the cost of inpatient hospital care within commercial insurance companies. And so that's just a whole new world for us to deal with. The number of drugs that are $80, $90, $100,000 a year is really staggering.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I went to India a couple of years ago, and they have free health care in the hospital, but they don't pay for drugs. So our guide was telling us, it's ridiculous. You know, you go to the doctor, they tell you what's wrong with you, and they give you a script, but you can't afford to fill it.
Right.
Yeah.
So your mission is wonderful, and it is apparently working, and you're serving the underprivileged when necessary. But if the other, how do I say this, if certain political pressures continue and we have less money in Medi-Cal and less money in Obamacare, at some point, are you going to be able to continue to do this?
Well, we'll certainly try. And, you know, we've been doing it for 100 years. So I suspect that we'll be able to figure out how. I think that if increasing pressures come, I think the hardest part's going to be the sudden unavailability of insurance. I think that's the thing that is most terrifying to a lot of people, is this notion of, you know, if I lose my job, I lose my insurance, I have a pre-existing condition, I cannot get insurance. That one is, I think that goes across the whole socioeconomic spectrum. And fortunately, that element of Obamacare has not been been lost.
But I think Kurt's point about the cost of drugs is the important one. I mean, we provided this care in the pre-Obamacare era, so I remember what it was like when a significant proportion, let's say a much larger proportion, of patients were uninsured compared with the situation now. So if we're going to slide back a little bit toward that would be unhappy. But I think we would know from experience how to try to manage that. What's very difficult to manage is exactly the point that you made about your trip to India. How do we make sure that the expensive, particularly all the new immunologic agents that we celebrate all the time, everybody, we all love to talk about all the new targeted therapies in the world of cancer therapy. How do we make sure that those therapies are available to our neighbors in Santa Barbara, regardless of their personal resources? That's going to be the daunting challenge. We're determined to do it, but if there's an Achilles heel, that's it.
And for someone like you that is facing something I could never face, that you know, the depressing aspect of looking at someone that's really sick, what do you do if you know they could have a drug, if they could afford it, that would help them, and they can't? That must be really awful.
Well, let me go back to your first point. You know, we're mortal. Like that doesn't get fixed. And so,
you see, there you go again.
What's that?
There you go again. You're depressing me.
Yeah, your audience is falling, as I thought.
Right.
So for anybody who's still listening, you know, the fact of the matter is that we're all at some point going to have something happen to us that makes us dependent on healthcare, makes us dependent on healthcare providers or on our families or friends. So part of cancer care is really to say, sure. I mean, yes, there are times that are sad, and I would do anything to fix problems, and sometimes can't. But ultimately, this is part of the human condition, and if we have a calling as oncologists, it's just that we want to be part of the process that's there to help when that happens. So having said that, yes, you're right. In some respects, I've adapted over the course of my career to more readily to the notion emotionally that we're a fragile species and that part of my job is to be with patients when they get really ill. And if there's a part that makes it hard for me during the day, it's sometimes the inability or the difficulty of getting for patients the things I think they need.
And do people, you know, you talked about one of the things you did over the years, which is to help people psychologically. What about helping doctors psychologically? I mean, there must be a need to support doctors emotionally. Is there programs in place, particularly new doctors?
Yeah, that's an insightful question. There's a real issue now increasingly of kind of physician burnout, it's referred to. A lot of it is actually traced to the electronic medical records, which have really advanced healthcare, but they have created a burden for physicians that's much different. I actually had to testify recently in Congress, of all places, and they were talking about this, and I said, well, there's nothing easier than illegible handwriting on a piece of paper. You know, that's very quick, and that was really how physicians used to be able to document. But now it requires entering everything into an electronic database, and so it's just much more time-consuming, and we haven't made the kind of cultural shift within medicine to figure out how to make that easier. So we have a lot of doctors who'll spend 20 hours, 30 hours a week after hours working on a computer to get their work done. And that's really challenging for physicians and their families.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kurt Ranzehoff, who's the CEO and Chief Medical Officer at Sansom Clinic, and Fred Cass, who is the Director of Medical Oncology and Hematology at the Ridley Tree Cancer Center. So, we're talking about the life of a doctor. Let me go the other direction about the life of a doctor. Where do doctors live in Santa Barbara?
Well, it's funny that, you know, the kind of cynical answer is to say, well, how old is the doctor? If they got here 40 years ago, some of them are living in Hope Ranch and some in Montecito in our clinic. Very few doctors they're living in regular neighborhoods all around Santa Barbara. We actually, housing for physicians, it sounds such a funny idea, housing, what could be the problem? The problem is we're trying to compete for people against places all over the state. So we actually now have another program that has been entirely supported by philanthropy to help make investments in physician housing so that in essence they bought the amount of the house that they're buying is what they can afford and is similar to some other part of the state. It's been an essential program. We actually went to Westmont College and said, how do you guys have anybody working here many years ago? And they said, this is how we do. And we've borrowed their program completely. But it's a huge issue.
Yeah, because if they can't afford to live here, that's nurses, probably even more so.
Yeah, nurses and physicians, especially certain kinds of doctors right now, because there's such a huge demand. So they can literally go anywhere in the entire state. Yeah.
So I'm talking to two male doctors. Who are better listeners, male doctors or female doctors?
Huh? It's a little choke there. You know, I know that there was a study, I think, that was just published that said that female doctors are better listeners, and there's definitely something to that. Occasionally, I feel sorry for some of our female doctors because I think some patients think that because they're women, they're going to have a lot more time, and so they feel sometimes the same time constraint, but I think the data says that female doctors are better listeners.
But what about, in general, a more serious question, do doctors, because they're so busy and have so much responsibility, listen? Because so much of what a patient could say is kind of buried. You know, in therapy it's called doorknob statements. As they're leaving, they'll say something that's the most important part of the session. You know, how do you get out of the patient and remember what it is that you really need to help them?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. Some of this is it's not so much things that can be taught. It's things, you know, hopefully that we've learn. But you're right. I mean, one of the things I'm trying to figure out when I talk to patients is what are they going to say as I start to walk out of the room that I can get them to say now while there's still plenty of time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like everything else. I mean, it's like your job. I mean, it's about relationship and conversation, mm-hmm. and it's about how you create in that space of time an atmosphere that's safe and that encourages the kind of conversation. I mean, I could talk about the things that I do in my practice. I think probably my colleagues all have their own techniques, but we're all trying to get to the same place, which is to create open relationships with patients where they feel comfortable.
But, you know,
sharing,
I'm listening to the two of you. You're both very emotionally intelligent. I'm not just saying that. You are. You're very, you know, you have a sensitivity to issues. You're emotionally intelligent. You know, I look at my going to college and graduate school. People who are good in science usually were clueless about things that involve, you know, interpersonal skills. So I would imagine let me ask you the question. Is that true? And is there more training necessary for people who just get out of medical school to really understand that it's not just science?
Well, if you're really interested in crunching numbers, there are a lot of other things to do in life than practice medicine. And particularly now, as I talk to millennials who are really good number crunchers, I don't see actually that many of them that are really envious of the job that I have. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that, like, you know, we are a diverse profession, and there are some parts of, you know, Kurt practices internal medicine. I practice a subspecialty of internal medicine. Our DNA has to be invested in conversations with patients because that's what internal medicine is all about. But there are subspecialties in medicine where technique and skill and dexterity and the ability to just do extraordinarily physical things, it really takes much more precedent over communication skills. And if that's your bent, then there are places in medicine in which you can be a great contribution to medicine.
So that leads us into the really interesting question we always ask on this show. How did you get to where you are? Like, where did you grow up in Los Angeles? And
yeah, I grew up in L.A. Nobody in my immediate family was a physician. I liked science at some point. I realized that, but I also liked people and place, I thought, for the intersection of science and human relationships, just as you're talking about, Neil, is medicine, and particularly I'm a general internal medicine doctor. So that's really what I do, is try to use science to talk to people about their everyday life and try to figure out how those things go together.
So when did you first decide you wanted to be a physician?
It must have been in high school, because it was a volunteer. I remember that I went and I volunteered at a local hospital, and I was a transport person. I pushed people around, which was actually a good experience. And then in college, I realized that I was an English major, and so I wasn't obviously completely committed. But I kept taking enough science classes to make sure that I would be able to do that.
And Fred, same question. Where are you from?
So first of all, I have to give a shout out to Kurt. I'm so glad he's an English major, because when I get a chance to hike with him, his conversation is so much more interesting in some respects than what I could bring to it. I had a kind of a circuitous, atypical route. Although I was a science major in college, I was in college in the 1960s. I got caught up in the passions of the 1960s and thought there was no way in 1968 I was going to take organic chemistry and trying to somehow positively impact the planet was so much more important. I actually went to law school and practiced law and ran a congressional office in the 1970s. And then at some point said, you know, I think where I started is where I ought to end up. And in 1980, went back and went to medical school and have been in medicine ever since.
You know, it's interesting. Both of you have expertise in a different area. And my son's friend, happens to be an oncologist and has an MBA from Columbia as well. Huh. And one of his paths is eventually to have your job.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the one of the places to really move ahead is if you have this consolidation taking place in the healthcare businesses that run a healthcare system. And, you know, to have what you have being a lawyer and to be able to read something other than a medical journal makes you a fuller person. By the way, I always told kids I taught finance at City College for 12 years, and I told them, you know, don't take courses in business now. Take it later as a graduate school. Take philosophy. Take English. You've become a fuller person. So should we be optimistic or pessimistic going into the next few years? I mean, are we going to be in a position where things are going to kind of work out, people will get drugs, we will have some type of federal program? Is there hope?
We will. So definitely, I guess just full disclosure and transparency, I'm one of those glass half full kind of people. But I think even besides from my predilection, I just think that in our part of the world, and what makes me sad is that I don't know that I can generalize this to all communities, but in our community, I think there's a real, in the time I've been here, which is almost 30 years, what I see is a overwhelming ethos in our community to take care of each other. And I do have this fundamental sense that's something our community will rally around to try to do. I wish I were more optimistic about the ability to do that all over the country, but I am optimistic about the willingness of our community to come together and somehow make sure that we get through this.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kurt Rasinghoff, CEO and Chief Medical Officer of the Sansom Clinic, and Fred Kass, who's Director of Medical Oncology and Hematology at Ridley Tree Cancer Center. So what would really be great is to have an urgent care facility in town. What do you think of that idea?
Well, we have one.
You do? Is it by any chance at Pasitas Lane?
It is. So we actually moved. How intuitive.
The, yeah.
We moved it from Hitchcock, where it had been for maybe 20, 30 years, to Pasitas because we wanted it to be bigger. And we moved it also there so that we can, the CAT scans and ultrasound machines are there. So we can now do a lot in our urgent care that was previously going to have to be done in an emergency room. And it's just so much less expensive to be able to go to an urgent care facility. And again, we can, if we need to, get a CAT scan done to figure out something that we would have ordinarily had to send someone to the emergency room for.
So what are the rules of engagement? You wake up on a Saturday morning with 102 temperature, or you break your finger, or you have some incident that, you know, back when I was a kid, 1950, I called Dr. Goldman, and he'd come with his bag to my house.
Right.
Today... Do you go to urgent care? Or do you go to the emergency room? What do you do?
You know, I think if you feel that you have a life-threatening illness or, you know, right. you feel that something cataclysmically bad is happening, you should go to the emergency room. If you feel that something's wrong and I really need to see somebody and I need to see him today because I'm worried about it, oftentimes that is an opportunity to go to an urgent care facility instead of the emergency room. Emergency rooms are great. If you are big time sick, that is the place to be. But it is probably the most expensive part of the whole healthcare system is to be there. And it's just, there's a way to handle a lot without going there.
It's amazing. We do get used to changes. Again, when I was a kid, the idea of going someplace other than having your doctor come to your house was totally unacceptable. And then in the 70s in New York, you would go to your doctor and the doctor would be very glad to see you. Today, I don't even think about calling my doctor if I break my finger. I go to the emergency room or urgent care because you're not going to, the doctor's probably hiking. So the world has changed. Does urgent care facility a profit center? Does that make money?
It does. It's there are parts of medicine that are not profitable, and there are some that are profitable. Urgent care is profitable. It's more of a community resource. It's not floating our entire operation.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is like when I go across the country, I see sometimes urgent care is with the same name. It must be a business someplace.
There are a lot of for-profit urgent cares around, yeah. And it's actually kind of an interesting thing. What you're seeing is you're seeing in CVSs and Targets and I think maybe in other kinds of pharmacies where they're really starting these operations to try to get people who are healthy but, just want to drop in for a simple problem to be seen in those settings. And I don't know that we know exactly how that's going to play out yet. On the one hand, I can understand it's extremely convenient for the patient. On the other hand, it can be very frustrating because as a physician, you have no idea what happened there. Mm-hmm. And so the patient comes back and, says the doctor, you there's no way to find out what happened. Yeah,
other than Yelp, which is not really fair. Speaking of Yelp, there's a thing called the Physician Clinical Care Report Card. By any chance, were you graded?
We are. We're graded by about everyone, it seems. And that particular score, we got 4.5 out of 5 stars, which is really good. That probably would put us in the top 10% of groups in California. So we were really proud of that. There's a lot of grading that there's a lot. It's good. There's a lot of accountability as a physician group now.
It's funny. When I went to get my MBA, I used to laugh with my friends in medical school. I said, if I don't do well in bond trading, 101, no one's going to die. But if you do all straight A's but get a C- in blood diseases and someone comes in, someone may die. I mean, you really have to be perfect, which is makes so much tension in the medical field, I would imagine. You're playing with people's lives.
You have to have good partners. There's a lot of times when, we'll know that something's wrong, but I know I have a colleague who knows more about that. And that's a good thing about Sansum's system is because it's so easy to keep track of everything that's going on because we have one record that keeps track of everything.
One of the sponsors of the show is CSU Channel Islands, and they have this new program where they're using virtual reality to train nurses. And what they've been able to do is have a avatar be the patient, and with the combination of the avatar and virtual reality, they can put themselves in the position of someone with Alzheimer's, someone who has, you know, a problem with their eye, so they'll know to put the, they eat only half their food, they know to turn the tray around. And so anyway, we saw that what it is, it's an amazing way of teaching people to be caregivers by putting them in the position of the patient. And and you're implementing a program for kids, aren't you, with virtual reality?
Well, we have a program that is virtual reality. When they're going to get a shot, they can put on these glasses that basically are just distracting them enough so that when they get the shot, it hurts less. And it's actually been successful. One of our doctors actually and his daughter did a little research project on that, and it did show that distracting somebody when they're getting a shot does help. When you mentioned about the program at Channel Isles, my daughter's in medical school right now, and it's really changed since Fred and I in the dark ages were going to medical school. They have actors who they hire to come and who are trained to try to trick the medical students, and so a lot more what you were asking before earlier, Neil, about that personal human touch, they're really trying to train that in early on.
That's great. And you know, it's like when I was on Wall Street, I was a securities analyst, and one of the dumbest questions I ever asked an airline executive is when they told me how much a trainer was, the simulator for an air. I said, that simulator costs more than a DC-9. Why would you just buy another DC-9? He looked at me and said, because when they fail, we don't have to replace it. you're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Kurt Razanoff, who is the CEO and Chief Medical Officer of Sansum Clinic, and Fred Kass, who is the Director of Medical Oncology and Hematology at the Ridley Tree Cancer Center. And I should say, because of what I consider somewhat inferior signage, that we should all be aware that Ridley Tree Cancer Center is part of Sansum. So let's make that very clear.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah. So on TV, besides drug ads, there's also ads for 23andMe and Ancestry.com. And, you know, I haven't done it because I don't want to know anything. But it's it's something that could be important, genetic counseling. Is that something that you're involved in?
Yeah. Yeah, we started this actually pretty early. I mean, we've been involved in genetic counseling. We started our program right around the same year when the BRCA, the breast cancer gene, was first identified by Mary Claire King and her group. And so we've been involved in this for a number of years. I think we've tried to understand that or talk to patients about this, that a huge part of our program is to talk with patients. The data itself is sometimes helpful, but it's very hard to interpret that data. There are results that patients may have very complicated family histories of cancer, have negative testing. And really, does that mean that there's nothing going on? There are patients who get testing and the results come back as equivocal. This is not completely right, but we're not sure it really has any impact. And then we have patients who have positive results, and the question is, what do I do about them? Do I absolutely need surgery? Do I not need surgery? What prophylactic treatment is right? So we think that the philosophy of our program is that we need to be there to counsel patients, and it's one of the reasons why we have 3 full-time, very highly trained and qualified genetic counselors.
Well, let me say that I found, among other things, this show to be very informative, because I really didn't understand about Sansum. And one of the things that you do that I think really needs to be shouted out more is the fact that you really are interested in serving everyone and doing it in a way that giving them first-class service. So I think that's just wonderful. And in that note, how can people help support Sansum and the Ridley Tree Center? Do you have fundraisers? Is there a website we can give? What can our listeners do?
Thanks for that. Yes, we have. We're a not-for-profit, we do accept donations, and they're tax-deductible. It can be done on our website, sansumclinic.org. It can be done through Ridley Tree Cancer Center for people who want to be sure that their donation specifically goes to cancer. So there's a lot of different opportunities. We have some mailings that go out as well.
And are there any, you just finished the center, are there any initiatives that you're looking to do?
Yeah, we are trying to start up a palliative care program. It's something that a real formal palliative care program. We have elements of that throughout the community, but we think that by establishing a real comprehensive one and putting it inside the Ridley Tree Cancer Center, that'll really offer something that we have elements of it in the community, but we think that we can tie it all up into a single service line that could really be an important step for patients in the community.
And does that need plant equipment, or is it just a matter of organizing it?
It's a programmatic. We need to hire nurses and social workers, and it won't support itself financially, so we are going to rely on some philanthropy. But we just think that it's the right thing to do for the community.
And in terms of cutting edge, not technology, but information, do you feel that, you know, being in a place like Santa Barbara helps or hinders the continuing ed kind of thing? I mean, I remember, you know, when people left Wall Street to go and move to a Connecticut campus, they lost the ability to talk to people on the street. Is there any issue here with, you know, not that energy where you're talking to people about cutting edge stuff?
You know, I think that the community is very sophisticated medically. We have about 60% of our patients who have access to their medical records online and can communicate with their physicians online. And fascinatingly, I think we have more than 2,000 patients over the age of 85 who communicate with their doctors via email.
Well, thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Fred, for being here. Thank you for all you do. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's 3